Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Pakistan, emigrated to America at age 16, and earned a BA in Economics and Political Science from Middlebury College and a Master's in Public Health from George Washington University. From 2006 to 2011, she worked in the Embassy of Pakistan as an Education and Diplomatic Research Associate. Since 2023, she's been the Deputy County Executive for Oakland County, in charge of Health and Human Services and the Public Services Departments. Her name? Madiha Tariq, and we're honored to have her as our guest. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to the Deputy County Executive for Oakland County, Madiha Tariq. Madiha, welcome, an honor to have you.
Thank you so much for having me here.
All right, you grew up in Pakistan.
That's right.
Talk about childhood, mom and dad, please.
So I grew up in Pakistan. My parents were actually both in the military. So we grew up kind of like a military life, lived all over the country because of the military upbringing. I was even in Kashmir, actually. I spent about three years in, I think it was preschool or kindergarten, elementary school, in the Kashmir Valley on the Pakistan side, and ended up eventually moving into the bigger city. So I was in Lahore right before I got my scholarship to come to the United States.
What's the biggest thing you learned from mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
I think the thing that I got from my dad was that he was the connector. He was always the person in the family, in the community, who brought people together. He was very gregarious and, really big host. And I think I carry that to
this
day.
Yes, you do.
I bring people together.
You do a fabulous job.
And my mom was somebody who never gave up. She's somebody who carried an underlying optimism about making things happen. I was not planning to come to the U.S., for example, but she had this dream of making sure that I got connected to an opportunity for higher education. When she was younger, and she got a scholarship program to come to the U.S. to complete her residency. She was a doctor. And her mom at that time said no. She said, nope, I'm not comfortable with that. You're going to stay here. So almost she pushed me to carry out that dream and come here and complete my higher education and build a career. And I'm really, thankful for her even to this day, because she's somebody who doesn't give up.
We're talking to Madiha Tariq. Pakistan, your home country, formed in 1947. Tell us about Pakistan and its 240 million people.
So people always think of Pakistan as a homogeneous country, but really, it is such an amalgam of cultures. The place where we grew up in Pakistan, the language is called Urdu. And, the actual meaning of the word Urdu is military camp. And the reason why this language was formed is because before the subcontinent split up, all these folks that spoke Hindi and Sanskrit and, some other Asian languages were all together in military camps, and that created the language of Urdu, the connecting language that linked everyone. Pakistan is all four seasons, and people think it's warm in Pakistan, but there are parts of Pakistan that get snow. We have the second highest peak in the world.
I was watching Ken Jennings on Jeopardy a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. and the end question was, what's the second highest peak in the world and in what country?
Pakistan, and it's called K2. So.
And it's only 700 feet shorter than Mount Everest.
That's correct.
Amazing.
We have an ongoing battle there on like who has the highest peak. So.
Okay. You learned English in the fifth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're 16 years old. You move from Pakistan to New Mexico by yourself.
That's correct.
Wow.
So let me just tell you something. This kind of goes back to my mom's, you know, hustler instincts, not giving up, staying positive. When we were in the small town, so I told you part of my life, I actually started school in Kashmir, in the Kashmir Valley. The first school that I ever went to for elementary school, it was the only school in the region that had chairs. The rest of the schools didn't even have chairs. People sat on the floor. But my mom wanted to bring me to the best school there. However, language or learning English as a language, there was limited opportunities in those places. So when we finally moved to the big city, my mom wanted to move me to a school where education was done in English so I could learn the language. And, you know, in fifth grade, I got put in the school by my mom and I couldn't understand my teachers because they taught in English. And I remember at that time, my principal told my mom that I have to read a book in English every week, a new book in English every week. It was miserable, I mean. But it actually, reading is how I learned the language. And then a couple of years later, I got the scholarship opportunity to move to the United States, where I had to use the English to survive.
And that's how the two of us have met, through reading and Beyond Basics,
exactly.
BAM, and Turkiya, right?
Yes, so. That's correct. That's why I have there's multiple reasons why I'm passionate about making sure that our kids can read.
We're talking to Madia Tariq, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Krasula. We're with Madia Tariq. Madia, 16 years old, I won't say what year, you leave Pakistan by yourself. Come to America. Tell us about the first week in America.
Oh, boy. So I had never really taken a flight by myself before. I'd been on flights, but never taken a flight by myself. And here I am boarding a flight in Lahore to land into JFK, one of the largest airports in the country. I mean, mind you, in Pakistan, I've never been exposed to people who didn't, you know, Pakistan culturally is a very vibrant and, you know, culturally diverse, but most people kind of look the same, right? So I've never met somebody who's African-American. I've never really met, interacted that much with people that are white, you know, Asian-American, East Asian. And here I am, I land in JFK. You know, when you first land in New York, you're kind of like, you get this lecture from home, don't trust anyone, don't talk to anyone. So I land, I'm like, you know, deer in headlights, looking everywhere. And I remember walking up to the counter. And by the way, my mom, because she thinks like she, you know, I'm coming to America, she packs pretty much everything but the furniture in my suitcase. So it's like a billion pounds. And I go up to the conveyor belt to collect my suitcase before customs. And I'm like trying to pull it. It's not coming off because it's so heavy. And this poor gentleman tries to come to help me to pull the suitcase. And I just start pushing him. I'm like, don't touch my suitcase. Don't talk to me. It was this like thing where, you know, it's this whole thing that happens to this day, the othering, you know, you other people that don't look like you, that have a different culture, different language. And I mean, the guy was just like any other person, you know, any of my uncles or friends back home, but I had never interacted with someone that didn't speak my language. And it was just really interesting. Do you know that movie, Eddie Murphy, Coming to America?
Oh, yes, Come to America.
I was the 16-year-old Pakistani Eddie Murphy, trying to figure out.
And she's become royalty just like Eddie became royalty.
And I'll tell you, one of the things that was really interesting, my first week, so I finally JFK, I take, at that time it was TWA. Do you guys remember those?
Sure, sure.
So I took a TWA flight to New Mexico, where my high school was. And I remember landing in my high school in the dorm, and the front door of the dorm had this door that I could not figure out how to open. It was like a bar. And so many weeks, I actually went through the back door that had an actual handle. And one day I was just sitting there, and this person just comes and they push the bar and open the door and go out. And I was like, oh, you know, I just never experienced. It was really, I think, I wish that every 16-year-old could experience the world the way I did as a 16-year-old.
So Eddie Murphy, I think in that movie, Coming to America, he became a prince. Zach and the kids would say that mom has become a princess. So, okay. You get a college degree from George Washington. Mm-hmm. You get a master's. And then in 2006, you get hired by the Pakistan Embassy, mm-hmm. Washington, D.C. How?
So, you know, one of the things that I was always, something that kind of struck with me when I left Pakistan and came to the U.S. was how severe the health disparities were in Pakistan. The lady that was my caretaker, my nanny, her husband died of TB, you know, a disease that you would not think that people would die of here. So when I first started my career, I was really interested in doing global health. I joined the embassy because when I first came to the, when I first graduated from school, I was working for a global health consultancy that was funded by USAID. But unfortunately, that was the year that the H-1B visas got cut in half. So here I was working on, at that time, I think it was President Bush, the PEPFAR program in Zambia and Eritrea doing global health. And I was told that I could not have my job past September 1st. And like my mom, I wasn't going to give up. I was going to stay in this space and find another way. So I joined the Embassy of Pakistan initially to just stay in the country because I could get a diplomatic status and go to grad school and finish my global health education and continue to do some global diplomacy work on the side. But it was a really wonderful stepping stone and gave me a lot of lessons that I learned there that I use today, because who knew that I was going to become deputy county executive in Oakland County, one of the most diverse counties, by the way, in Michigan. 13% of county residents are foreign-born, households. So really was a, I think everything in life is meant to be. And that's how I think initially my reason for going to the embassy was to be able to continue earning money while I'm going to grad school. But it became such a big blessing over time.
Almost 6 years with the embassy. Madea, what's the biggest thing you learned in those 6 years?
It was really interesting to be in the United States, but also be closely linked to all the struggles that people who have less than in other countries are facing, being up close and upfront with it. And I think with social media, we get to see this more often, where, we're going to, a fancy restaurant, eating our fancy meals, but then you can see that people are starving on the other end. I think I got an early lesson to that there is such a huge disparity globally in what people have and what people don't have. And I think the other piece I'll say is global diplomacy. I think being in a diplomatic space helped me further this ability to bring people together. When you work in an embassy, you work with people that are all over the political aisle. And our goal as, you know, diplomats is to bring, let them see the same promised space, you know, the same end goal. And that was really important lesson for me.
How was it you got to come to Michigan?
Well, I came to Michigan for love. When I was at the embassy, I met this reporter who wanted to interview someone at the embassy about some of the military relationships that the U.S. and Pakistan have. And then he just kind of kept calling me, and I said, okay, well, I guess I can grab a coffee with you. And that was Zach. coming to me for an interview, and we just ended up finding each other. Then turns out Zach is from Michigan, and he actually is from Grand Rapids, from West Michigan. And I just remember one day he came and he said, you know, I'm really interested in working in the real world, you know, working close to the ground where things are actually happening. And D.C. oftentimes, as you know, can be a little bit, you know, separated from the ground. So that's how we ended up coming to Michigan. He got a job with Ford, and literally we got married, and 2 days later I was in my new apartment in Michigan.
We're talking to Maghia Tariq. When we come back, we're going to ask her about access. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula. We're with Maghia Tariq, Deputy County Executive, Oakland County. From 2013 to 2023, you're with Access. Mm-hmm. What is Access?
Access is the largest Arab American health and human services organization in the country. My role at Access was working with the health division. I worked on a lot of the on the ground community health initiatives, and also engaged in advocacy and research. One of the things that really drew me to Access was the fact that I've always believed that identity is a public health issue. And working with the Arab American community, it's very obvious, right? Arab Americans up until now were not even recognized in the census as a minority. So when you don't have aggregate data about the issues that impact you, it is hard to advocate for funding, hard to advocate for policy change that benefits the community. Access is like family to me. They were very important for me personally as well, because I left everyone I knew in Washington, D.C. and moved here to Michigan, and they really, that community truly embraced me personally and professionally. And I'm very grateful for the time that I had with them.
What's the biggest thing you learned in those years with Access?
I think the biggest thing I learned at that time, which is, I think, very relevant and poignant to point out now too, is how hard nonprofits work. The social safety net that we have that supports the most vulnerable people in our community, the poorest, the ones closest to the pain, they really go above and beyond. No employee in my team was doing one job. They did 10 people's jobs just to make sure that a family could put food on the table and stay in their home. And also deal with all of the negative rhetoric that sometimes exists for specific communities. I think that the culturally specific care was another thing that was a lesson that I learned. Even being Muslim and coming from Pakistan, there's all these intricacies for the Arab American community and the community we serve that's third generation immigrants that specifically impacts them. That was really important. And the last thing that I learned is what an incredibly resilient and powerful community the Arab American community is here in Michigan, but also nationally. Some of the greatest businesses in our country, scientists as well as educators and advocates that have made national impact come from the Middle East and North American community. Arab Americans are also extremely civically engaged. We don't realize that. You think about Arab Americans and you say, oh, they're all immigrants, they're all green card holders, but 75% of Arab Americans are citizens. They are the voting population in our state.
Who have been one or two of the most impressive, the ones you look up to the most?
People in general?
No, okay. Arab Americans.
I would say, I would be remiss not to mention Dr. Mona Atisha, the Flint doctor, who actually, I'm going to the Pontiac Baby Parade today. She really not only has kept at heart the needs of the people that are don't have voices, but she's also created a program that is bipartisan approved and provides care to moms and babies. RX for Kids, as you may know, was launched in Flint last year, and actually May 1st, it launched in Pontiac. So every mom in Pontiac will be receiving, $1,500 Medicaid births, $1,500 upon birth, and then a monthly cash prescription to take care of their baby for the first year of their life. And I think she's done an amazing job having people understand the science of infant care and how that overlaps with the economy.
We're talking to Madia Tariq. 2 years ago, 2023, she became the deputy county executive for Oakland County. Madia, tell us about Oakland County.
Oakland County is one of the a very diverse county for the size that we have. I think it's often there's a misconception that Oakland County is not diverse. One of the things that I really want to elevate is that 13% of Oakland County's population is foreign-born households. 14% of Oakland County's population is African American. 8%, over 8% is Asian American. So it's a very diverse county, but it's also a county that is kind of like the hub of talent and development for our state. Oakland County, 40% of research and development that happens in the state of Michigan actually happens in Oakland County. We have about 700,000 people that work in Oakland County every single day, and about 400,000 of them call Oakland County home. We have the lowest unemployment rate in the state, the highest GDP per capita. We're actually number 14 in the country for counties that have at least a million residents.
And we have 1.2 million.
1.2 million residents in Oakland County. Just to summarize, I think Oakland County is a place that has really helped. And politically, it's gone back and forth. It's gone through a big transition, actually, from leadership. However, there's consistency in the way we grow because in Oakland County, we have put progress over partisanship. If you think about our budget, always passed unanimously in the county. If you think about our partnerships, a lot of our partnerships are also beyond the polarization that exists nationally. But So just kind of to summarize, you know, Oakland County is a place that's doing really well. We're growing, not just economically, but also in population. But we also see that it is a double-edged sword. This is also the home, a home to some of the people who are struggling quite a bit. In fact, if you look at certain communities, the child poverty rate is higher than the state average, right? This is also a place where we have had some, you know, very painful histories that we are trying to mend and grow through. This is a place where housing is short and expensive, right? So we are currently, you know, we are currently short by like 11, over almost 1,200 housing units for affordable housing in Oakland County. And affordable housing is important because if you want people to work in the county, you have to give them a place to live. Affordable housing can help people like nurses find a place right next to the hospital they work in, right? So it's a talent. We have a lot of hunger to grow the talent in Oakland County.
We're talking to Madia Tariq. If you want to learn more, www.oakgovernment.com. OAKGOV.com. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR.
You've been listening to your inspirational fireside chat, Anything Is Possible, for nearly 20 years.
This is Anything Is Possible, and I'm Jack Rasula.
But what has Jack been up to lately? Search at AIP Speaker Series and find out. Jack has interviewed thousands of historical voices, some of whom have offered him their philosophy of life, like Tom Izzo.
And Tom writes, "Work hard, persistence always wins out, discipline is the highest form of love. Stay humble."
The great Ernie Harwell.
"My aim is to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God."
And the voices of our generation.
"I am reassured continuously that His unfathomable love and mercy are the greatest gifts of my life and my constant source of strength, reassurance, and guidance. His Holiness, Pope Francis."
At AIP Speakers Series is the YouTube channel where all of these jewels can be heard, including some of Anything Is Possible's greatest guests.
And we're with Mitch Albom.
The Little Liar is really a book about truth and lies and the price we pay when we lie.
This is Anything Is Possible, and with Tom Watson.
My father loved to play with the pros at the club, developed a very quick friendship with Stan and played some golf with him. And then he would ask me to play golf with him and Stan.
Our guest this week was born with a rare disorder characterized by the absence of arms and legs. His name, Nick Vujicic.
Something that every human being actually deals with, Jack. It's the choice of continuing to believe or giving up.
And recordings of the AIP Speaker Series events at St. John's Resort. Go to YouTube and search at AIP Speaker Series. It's free. And remember,
anything is possible.
Spohom. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to the Deputy County Executive for Oakland County, Madia Tariq. All right, let's talk about a few of the programs. The Medical Debt Relief Program. Mm-hmm.
I am so thrilled about the fact that we're able to do this in Oakland County. So, as you all know, we received funds through ARPA from the federal government. And the idea was to spend this in a way that has a triple impact. And medical debt is something that we were really thinking about because most of the people that have medical debt in the country come from the, you know, vulnerable populations. Also, medical debt is the number one cause of bankruptcy in this country. So people who are trying to make it, who are trying to start their business, can be crippled if they have medical debt and they can't progress. They can't finish their college degrees. They can't buy their first home. So we came across an organization that is called Undue Medical Debt. And what they do is they actually buy the debt from hospitals, debt that has not been cleared, and they end up buying it cents on the dollar and eliminating it. So imagine that you have medical debt and your debt from Henry Ford right across goes into the collection agency, right? But instead of collection agency, they buy that debt, same rate, and they just throw it in the trash. So a $2 million investment in Undue Medical Debt will help eliminate $200 million in medical debt in Oakland County. And this program is already underway. And right now, we have helped 14,000 families eliminate $9 million in debt.
So if you want to learn about that, www.oakgov.com. All right? Okay. Recently, Oakland County Executive Dave Coulter announced a $3 million pledge from a family by the name of Penske.
Yes. Yes. And I just have to say, Roger Penske is one of the most amazing human beings. I don't know. I'd never met him before, but I remember having a conversation with him. He actually, during the pandemic, cold called Executive Coulter and said, "Hey, I want to help. How can I help?" And Dave always picks up the phone when you call him. So he picked up the phone and he said, "I have a warehouse, that you guys can use."
I think the way he answers is, "I'm from Oakland County and I'm here to help you."
Exactly. Exactly. That's a spirit. That's how we all answer. So during COVID, we worked together with him because we had all this PPE and things that needed to have a space to stay. So we worked with, Roger Penske's team. And then, your COVID passes and he actually calls Dave again and he says, "Hey, I would like to talk about mental health and community safety." So that's how I ended up getting connected with him. And one of the things that we talked about is the fact that, there's been a 35% increase in mental health, cases in our county. And a lot of the times when not addressed, these end up making more issues in the community. And what ends up happening is when there's a mental health issue, first responders end up addressing it because we have waits and we have it's very hard to get connected to mental health immediately. So we knew that we needed to create something that helps demystify mental health for all of our residents. And we had this idea of creating a walk-in center where a person that has a mental health issue can just walk in and we deal with their immediate need and then help them get linked to long-term care. So, he ended up, the Penske Foundation ended up funding us. And one of the things that we added with this additional fund is making sure that this service is also available to first responders because first responders struggle with mental health. And that's what we've been able to do is open it up. We've seen 1,800 people through our soft opening. We haven't even opened the building.
Haven't even officially opened?
No.
www.oakgov.com. All right. Let's talk about Children's Village.
Mm-hmm. So as Deputy County Executive, I oversee health and public services, and under public services is Children's Village. Children's Village is a juvenile corrections facility for Oakland County, but we're not just, a jail. We also have, we also see here children that are suffering from abuse and neglect, as well as, children that are in our residential treatment programs. Children's Village is a place that it's really hard. When I first joined, it was very hard for me to walk into a place where children are essentially, you know, incarcerated. And one of the things that I always, you know, think about is where did we go wrong as a society that a child ended up in this situation? So we've really tried at Children's Village to make sure that the time we have with kids that are coming here is a restorative time, and it helps them build themselves in a way that they don't return. I go to Children's Village once a month, by the way. I actually cook there for kids. I circulate through the different divisions. And the first question I always ask the kids is this your first time here? And Jack, I'll tell you, the thing that bothers me is that so many kids have been there multiple times. You know, and the journey is always the same. They first came here because they were in the abuse and neglect space, right? So they came into Mandy's place. And then as they grew older, they started getting trouble in schools. Then they started getting trouble on the streets. And it's most of them have been there 7-8 times. Mm-hmm. And there's so many reasons why they keep coming back there. You know, of course, you know, building a stronger system where a stronger capacity for schools and our community to be able to handle some of these things upstream is what's going to make a difference. I'm so grateful that we have done so many new initiatives at Children's Village since I've been there. And one of them is helping kids read with a partnership with Beyond Basics.
We have one more minute. Mm-hmm. You are the epitome of a can-do optimist. A young listener tonight has got dreams. What do you say to that young listener?
Well, what I'll tell them is that if you are walking into a room, it doesn't matter how you got there. You belong in every room you walk into. If you go up to the table and there is no chair for you, build that chair and pull it up, because you are needed and you're wanted, and you are just one step away from being the most successful, healthy, creative, and beautiful person that you truly are.
And you live what you just say. So thanks much for all you do. Keep up the great, great work.
Thank you for having me here.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. Make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol.
Believe in yourself.